This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville.
Baseball Hall of Famer Jason Stark.
And then the robot said, strike.
That's why you're going in the Hall of Fame.
It's an inside the park home run, Doug Glanville.
Mike Trout is coffee at Starbucks with a double latte, skinny.
Doug, are you ready to make some podcast magic?
I am ready. Bring on the magic wand. Let's do it.
Greetings and welcome to Starkville, now part of the Athletic Baseball Show, where you'll find great baseball talk all week long and all off-season long. I'm Jason Stark. I write about baseball for The Athletic, and I'm joined once again by my good friend, writer, broadcaster, professor, distinguished former major leaguer, and the voice of Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN Radio, Doug Glanville. Still taking me a long time to get through all the stuff you do every week, Doug. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. You know, I got to come up with like a profession that consolidates all that. There might be something. So I'm going to work on that. It seems like it would tie to the farming industry somehow with, just a lot of work. So, but I'll come back on you. But yes, I'm enjoying it. Things are well. UConn, my class is finished my first week, start the second week. Really enjoying that, and a whole new crop of students. Big class this year, 56, 57 students. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, it's your charisma. Never ends. Something like that, right? So, Doug, I'm in a cool little section of Starkville known as Cooperstown. Yeah. It's always special to be here, but especially this week. I'm here for Hall of Fame Election Week. I'll be part of the MLB Network programming all week. We have our election show Tuesday night, special two-hour edition of MLB Now on Tuesday afternoon with our guest this week, Brian Kenny. And then more Hall of Fame talk on MLB Now on Wednesday. So what do you think, man? You jealous that I'm here and you're not?
Yeah, I really can I guess what hotel you're staying at over there? I'm sure. But yeah,
yeah, you can guess.
It's a beautiful experience. And, I played in the Hall of Fame game once, not the major league level one, but just as an old retired baseball player. Ozzie Smith, Phil Niekro, Dale Murphy, Jim Rice, Rick Wise, and a whole cavalcade. Bill Lee was classic. So it's a lot of great memories, but it's such a nostalgic, beautiful town and great memories. My Mike Schmidt photo I got when I was like 11, got it from the beautiful color in the powder blue Phillies uniform. That's one of my keepers from Cooperstown. So great memories there.
So you were in the powdered blue uniform, or Mike Schmidt was in the powdered blue uniform?
Mike Schmidt, yeah.
In the Hall of Fame game.
It's kind of a headshot. No, it was just that I bought a headshot when I was like 11.
Oh, you bought it?
For my first trip to Cooperstown.
Okay.
So I still have it.
I always refer to Cooperstown as the Magic Kingdom. Unfortunately, it wasn't magical enough to make 10 inches of snow disappear this morning when I was trying to get from my hotel to the Hall of Fame, but it's okay. Cooperstown is actually beautiful and charming any time of year. And hey, when it's covered by snow, it's so picturesque. Just a special town. For those of you listening who have never visited here, you should put that on your bucket list, because if you love baseball, you'll love Cooperstown. I think it's pretty much that simple. So Tuesday night is the night that they're going to reveal who got elected. Caveat, if anybody. As I said, I'll be on the election show, which starts at 4 in the afternoon Eastern time, announcement shortly after 6. But before we talk to Brian Kenny about that show and the big questions on this ballot, here is my take. Okay, I think there's going to be some drama here because, boy, it looks like this is going to be very close. But my gut feeling is your friend, Scott Rolen, your former teammate, is going to come up just short, which means, all right, we'd have a shutout in the writers' voting for the second time in 3 years after there'd been two in the previous 50 years. So – Doug, I'm curious. I mean, you don't vote, but you know, you're certainly a interested observer in the process. How would you react? How do you think Scott would react, since you know him so well? And do you think it's a problem if we have two elections in 3 years where nobody gets elected?
Well, you know, I think my first thought is, you know, when you think of your time, your era of playing, you associate all these great players, and you know that they had to be some of the greatest of all time. And so you always feel like, oh, there's always some player every year that's going to be able to reach that threshold just because of the nature of who you competed against all those years. So that's like the first take. And then you look inward, you think of your own teams, and Scott Rolen is somebody that definitely was one of the best that I played with. You know, this is someone that was, you know, so athletic in terms of defense. I mean, his defense alone was just Hall of Fame caliber, just the glove, the consistency. And by the way, when you had a catch with Scott Rolen, it was a perfect four-seam spin, like,
of course,
every time. Like, I mean, it was just a laser, so accurate, and what you call a heavy ball. So he probably had a high spin rate. But Rolen just had that ability, and just the defense was must-watch TV, just watching him go about his business. But just the way he's the imposing figure he was in the batter's box, and you could tell he was a power hitter that could hit for average, and there was times you could see him go the other way. There's times where he decided that, you know, it was more about the extra base hits, and then he ran like his hair was on fire. So there's all these elements that were intangible that when you think of Rolen, you know, I could see, you know, Hall of Fame makes sense to me. I'm not going into the numbers. I'm just looking at him and thinking about someone I played with, against, and all the things that he brought. But Scott was a character, and that's you know, one part of it made him very memorable as a teammate.
He was indeed. We'll talk about some of your favorite Scott Rolen stories a little later. But, you know, I've been thinking about this. We've had one player now, David Ortiz, elected in 3 years. And so is that an indictment of the system? Or is it telling us that the system works, that it's supposed to be hard to get in? I kind of go back and forth on this. Where would you land?
Yeah, I see part of it as a reset. And look, we came through this fog of uncertainty, and I'm not sure we're totally out of it. I think that's part of it. But you can't dismiss the impact of PEDs and PEDs and just not only what it did to the game, but the trust, the ability to try to sift through what is authentic and what is not, where that actually measures, what are the lines that you draw in the sand. I think it takes a long time to come with some sort of understanding, whether personally as a voter or as a fan or as an opponent or competitor, to understand really what impact it made. I certainly have spoken quite a bit about the negative components of it, but I also look at it not knowing what the timeline is, about how, when you reconcile, when do you come to a place? Is it a generational shift? Is it that new voters come in? Is it that, you know, we have new information, players retire? What, you know, I don't know, but I think it takes a lot of time, and the uncertainty kind of lends itself to be like, well, you know, I want to make sure that this person gets into the hall, but I also, you know, want to make sure, obviously, it's an elite class. And I want to make sure that the numbers were authentic, that actually it's something that I can trust. And because something like PEDs has such a direct correlation with numbers and longevity and productivity, that's where you have a problem, because you can't separate it. It's not like, you're like, oh, okay, character clause, the guy was, you know, racist. You're kind of like, all right, maybe it's a sign of the times. It's harder, but numbers that are inflated are just numbers that are inflated. And that's the main metric by which you get in. So I think there is an element of that. I look at the players I played with in that time and look at these numbers and their capabilities, and I see, oh yeah, they're really talented, and there's a lot of Hall of Famers in that group. There's just a lot of hesitation too.
Would you lower the percentage from 75 to, I don't know, 70? I mean, if it was 70, Curt Schilling would have been elected a couple of years ago. Rolen is going to clear 70 this year. Todd Helton, I think, has a good chance to clear 70 this year. I mean, I'd personally be opposed to that, but maybe you feel differently. Do you think the bar is raised too high, or should it stay that high?
I think it should be high. And I like the fact that there are opportunities to revisit with different committees. You know, the way the hall or the process has tried to evolve, that is important to recognize that we don't have all the information and there's no one system that should stay the same forever. I mean, there's circumstances that shift. But I do like the way baseball in general has tried to keep a consistency to it. You know, that's what we love about the game, right? It's like, it's a dependable tried and true. And the threshold is something relatable to other times and other periods of time that allow you to have that debate and that conversation. But, you know, more data, to me, more information. And I guess if you look 5-6 years out, nobody's getting in, and you know that these are maybe great players, that's a conversation. You look at the National Football League or other systems. One compelling thing I found interesting with the NFL is that there's actually debate, right? You know, you could be a voter and you could actually debate, and they bring people from, there's like former players, there's all, you know. So it's like, that could be interesting, right? I mean, imagine having this televised for baseball to be in the room where, like, you know, Jason Stark is debating, you know, whoever over like who should get in. I think that would be pretty interesting, right? And could minds be changed? I don't know. I mean, you know, I wrote that piece about the hall with Bonds and others. And, you know, I think it created a conversation, and that was different because I was a player, not trying to just sort of indict everybody, but just say, look, you know, this is how it impacted me as a player. And it's problematic to reward these guys. You know, I think we should have that discussion.
Well, you know, just for me personally, I like having it 75%. I like having it high. I think that's what keeps it special and exclusive. You know, I sometimes think of it this way. If you were running for dog catcher and you got 70% in the dog catcher election, you know what they'd call it? A landslide. But if you get 70% in a Hall of Fame election, what do we call that? A heartbreak. Yeah. And, you know, it's the source of a lot of disappointment, sometimes anger. Curt Schilling got angry. I know that. But it's the Hall of Fame. It's supposed to be hard. Doug, am I wrong?
No, you're not. And absolutely. And the, you know, it's some one of these moments where you look and say, well, I don't know how, what should be the number? You know, we don't know. Like, should it be one person a year? You know, you try to stay away from that because the greatness that you're assessing should be independent of like, you know, quotas, a one guy or whatever it is. It doesn't have to be a guy now, which is great. We should recognize all the women connected to baseball. But I think that there's so much to unearth because we are still coming out of this fog, and I don't know if we're through it. So that also makes you wonder what numbers, because you're already questioning the numbers produced on the field to a certain degree. So it's natural to go back and say, well, 75, but it should be hard. Absolutely. And, you know, I have great admiration for so many guys that have put up great careers, probably aren't in the hall. You know, it's like some of the best players that I played against. So, you know, it's tough, and it should be.
Well, you know what else I know? We can't settle anything, the two of us. So I think we should just ask somebody who has more reverence for the Hall of Fame than anybody I know. We're going to bring in my good friend Brian Kenny of MLB Network. We're hanging out in Cooperstown together all week, and it's so much fun.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper Polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech Chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima Crew Neck T-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB Show.
I am here in the beautiful Otisaga Hotel with my good friend Brian Kenny of MLB Network. And I know it kind of looks like we're at the Masters, but we're really here in Cooperstown for the Hall of Fame election. Brian, you can vouch for the fact we're in Cooperstown, correct?
Yes. And I'm sorry. I apologize. My Basset Hound hasn't arrived. Otherwise, we'd have the fireplace Basset right here. Have the Jason Stark Christmas special. That'd be nice.
We thought about trying out the fireplace, but no good could come of that outside of a little scenery here on the podcast.
Cooperstown Fire Department would be very upset right. If we tried doing that in this old hotel.
Right. So let's not digress. Let's talk a little bit about Cooperstown and the Hall of Fame. You should know that Brian Kenny is actually the president of the Cooperstown Chamber of Commerce. Nobody loves Cooperstown as much as you, Brian. How did you come to develop this reverence for Cooperstown, New York?
It's a combination of things. I used to come here a lot. I grew up on Long Island. My father would take me up here, and we would vacation all around New York State. Wow. You know, my father and my mother with my sister, like we vacationed, we camped, believe it or not, when camping was a thing. We didn't glamp, we camped. And we would camp around places, and then occasionally we'd stay at places, say these little motels, and we used to come up here. I have pictures of me when I'm 8 years old. I think I'm standing in front of Stan Musial's locker with my glove. Like I brought my glove, you know, in case, you know, a game broke out somewhere in the Hall of Fame. So I've been coming to the Hall of Fame since I was a little boy.
Wow.
And then I worked as a local sportscaster at Channel 62, WTZA-TV in Kingston, which is only about an hour and a half from here. So I used to come up here. I come up here on weekends. Again, sometimes I come up here with my dad when my dad was alive, and we came up and we had father-son weekends here. And then I had father-son weekends with my kids, you know, with my boys. And my wife and I started coming up here because we had five kids. You know, you have three, four, and five, but we had so many kids that you when you make trips, you can't go that far away. So, like, we couldn't go to Aruba and leave my parents with five kids. They refused. I said, no, you have too many kids. But we could come to Kingston and be within striking distance if one of the kids got a cold or something like that. So we've been coming here for years. My oldest daughter got married here at the Otisaga, so we've got it pretty complete. I've always loved history. I'll wrap this up. I've always loved baseball history. Coming here was always a great trip just to soak in the baseball history. So it just made so much sense. Plus, the village is beautiful. The countryside is beautiful. So there's two things working. There's baseball and there's the village itself.
I mean, you're preaching to the choir. Mm. As you know, me, my wife Lisa, our whole family, we have a reverence for Cooperstown. And the year of my induction weekend, I mean, we had 100 friends and family come here. Mm. And we told all those people, this place is magical. It's the Magic Kingdom, and they all fell in love with it because you can't help it. But this is not a week when you're chilling or I'm chilling. This is Hall of Fame election week. We're doing MLB Now daily, 2 p.m. Eastern, from the Hall of Fame, and then we'll be part of the big Hall of Fame election special on Tuesday night starting at 6 p.m., correct?
Right. We'll have, and then we're doing the official announcement with Josh Rowitz, as we've done here. We used to do this in our studios. We'd have Jeff Idelson, who's then president of the Hall of Fame, come down and make the announcement. And then I forget if it was pandemic related that we just thought, well, they couldn't travel. They didn't say it made no sense to go to New York. And so we did it up here. And then once we did it up here, it was like, how come we're not coming up here every year? And then a year later, it was like, okay, let me start doing MLB Now from here. And then 2 years later, hey, Jason, what are you doing in the winter? You're not that busy. Why don't you come up here? You know, and so we're up here. John Morosi is up here. And now we're doing hours and hours of shows, which we can do when we're here at the Hall.
I mean, we just finished recording we did it live. We're doing an MLB Now show from the Plaque Gallery, the coolest studio in history. But you should let people know, Brian, what you've been doing since you got here, because you've been a busy human.
Yeah, I don't know. This is like, it's what I like to do. It's what you like to do. You and I have been going over our ballots and going over Hall of Fame comparative analysis is what we like to do with baseball. We've been doing it for 25 years since we first started working together at ESPN. And we would come on. And I like the highest praise I've ever gotten is from you and Tim Kirkchin, who have said that, like, I know before I come on your show, like, I better do my homework because I've got to defend my ballot to you.
I was just going to bring this up. It's so funny. I don't remember what year this was, but it really is probably 20 years ago. Me telling you on the air, when I do my ballot, I literally think to myself, how am I going to defend this ballot to Brian Kenny? And I know that sounds crazy to people out there, but let me explain what that's all about. This is Brian is somebody who challenges us to think and to think through every name we check and every name that we don't check and to be able to explain to each other and to you why we think what we think, why we vote how we vote. Now, Brian doesn't have a vote. I'm sorry about that. If it was up to me, I'd give you a vote, but it's not up to me. But when I first told you that, when I fill out my ballot, I'm actually thinking about you. What went through your head?
Well, no, that's the highest praise I could get because I know you work hard at it.
I do.
And I know, look, you and Tim don't have to explain anything to me, but we have good sparring. And look, we have these all internal dialogues, too, where we're battling. And look, we could go back and forth on Andrew Jones, on Jimmy Rollins. There's no perfect answer, just as it is with the Veterans Committee. I've evolved in my thinking. You know, again, I've gone from one place to another. Back then, in ye olden times, remember, very few people had any objective methodology. And if you recall, most of your brethren, not you, not Tim, you know, not Tom Verducci, you know, not Ken Rosenthal, not Joel Sherman, but a lot of writers out there, it was the dominant, you know, column that would be written would be something along the lines of, if I have to think about it, if I have to work at it, the answer is no. And it's like, no, you should work on it a little bit. And there were people out there that would be, you know, saying, wait, take a closer look at, like, Ron Santo. Take a closer look at some of these players that are not getting, like, we need to do a better job of doing comparative analysis, sabermetrics, which was the, you know, again, on the rise then, of just taking into account the run scoring environment. Like a simple thing like that, that a .300 batting average in 1930 was not the same as 1968. And many of the players that we would advocate for were guys who were in a low run scoring environment. It was like, who were hitting 19 home runs and had 90 RBIs. And it's like, oh, that's not that good. No, actually it was great, depending on the year. Yes. So anyway, I thought, I love doing the sparring, you know, with you. And I know you really work at it. So just like explain it, have a reason. I think most voters now seem to do that and have reasons. And I've swung back to where, all right, enough vote shaming. I'm an original vote shamer. But now that, like, shaming is the national pastime, you know, in social media, I'm like, all right, enough of that. And I like when someone has what I call the anomalous pick. Have an anomalous pick. Have someone out of left field that you go, I like this guy. And so when I hear Harold Reynolds or Matt Viscursion now say, I like Jimmy Rollins, I don't rip them. Say, what's his war? Look at his career war, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, good. There's something that you're recognizing in Jimmy Rollins' career and his game that makes you think he's a Hall of Famer. Maybe we lack the language to use that. So I've swung. But back in the old times, I was like, do you have a reason for this? And it's like, and why would you have this? I don't think I ripped you that much, but I pushed back.
No, but you challenged.
Yes. Yes.
I don't mind the challenge. See, I love the debate when it's a thoughtful debate and we're each actually listening. Like the climate of the Twitter debate isn't normally that enjoyable. I wrote my ballot column on the Athletic. I think it posted last Friday, and a friend of mine texted me immediately and said, "Your mentions seem fun." and my response was to say, "You know what we call the day when I reveal my ballot? A day to not check my mentions."
Yeah, don't go there.
But, you know, yeah. I do see every once in a while they pop up as alerts. And I'm like, I learn how little I know about baseball.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. Like that.
Well, it's a bad, you know, the medium is the message was, you know, the old saying from Marshall McLuhan. And it rings true in a lot of ways. And I think social media and Twitter specifically, it's just, it's bad technology for communicating. And it can be great and it can be terrible, but people, it's just people take shots and you have to jab. It's a jab and then you wait. And here he is again. I see a bit of weakness in his argument. I'm going to attack that. Or he left me a trigger word. I'm going to attack that. As opposed to if you were like, hey, we're going to take your calls right now on your Hall of Fame ballot. Someone might say, Jason, you're way off. But by the time you're done speaking, you'd reach some common ground and some understanding. On Twitter, you don't do that. So you're an idiot. And that's what comes out. And again, I look at it now, have a reason for what you're thinking. As opposed to MVP voting, which again, I think that can be done with some degree of certainty. It can be done with some degree of specific study. Hall of Fame is a nebulous sort of line. Is he above the line? Is he below the line? So nobody's an idiot if you don't have somebody. Nobody's right or wrong. I disagree with those who are, like just performance only, like Mark Feinsand. We had him on the show today. I was like, you have a terrible ballot. Now, I just don't like his ballot.
Right, but you weren't vote shaming. Mentioning that.
Plus, so people would know. If you say, and Mark Feinsand is saying, I am performance only, if Major League Baseball let those guys on the field and they performed and I think it's great, I'm going to vote for them. Completely legitimate. I disagree with it, but it's completely legitimate.
Right. Well, we'll get into the vote and non-vote of mine that created the most furor, but let's just look at what we think is about to happen Tuesday night. It looks like we're going to be teetering on that tightrope of electing Scott Rolen, possibly electing Todd Helton, or electing nobody. Mm. What's your guess?
The most likely scenario is Rolen and Helton fall just short. I hope that doesn't happen. I'm hoping that there will be some sort of surge for people who are looking at the ballot that are thinking, hey, again, I think there was a lot of psychological weight with Bonds, Clemens, Sosa, Schilling, and for different reasons with Schilling. But there was just it absorbed a lot of energy. It absorbed your attention. When you're just looking at it, you have to figure it out. So now that those guys are clear, I think people will have a fresh look. And I think people evolve in their thinking. You know, not everybody has the same vote all the time. I'm with you. I think you said, once I vote yes, I've made my decision. Agreed. But I've been on the fence with guys where later I'll say, you know what, I'm fine with him. You know, or I've done more study and I've figured some more things out and I think it would be good to get him in. And I think you can change your vote. It's not like either he is or he isn't. I think that's an ignorant stance. Either he is or he isn't. No, not true. We're choosing. Do we want to honor somebody? Do we want to make somebody salesman of the year, policeman of the year, baseball player of the year, grant them some sort of, you know, meritorious service award? It's a nebulous thing. So there's no right or wrong, but just have a reason for it. And I think people do evolve. And when there's a cleared up ballot, I'm hoping enough people will look at it and say, I don't know if they do this, but know that next year, Adrian Beltre, Joe Mauer, and Chase Utley hit the ballot. They're all strong candidates. I think Beltre gets in. The other two, I think, should get in. But they're strong at the very least. The next year, Ichiro and CeCe Sabathia. And some other strong guys like Dustin Pedroia. A couple of strong guys who will get some votes. And I think if you're looking at that, this is the year. Like, you know, not as, you know, Mad Dog said to me, do you think guys are thinking, hey, I want a guy at the ceremony this year. I don't want Fred McGriff standing by himself. I don't want to think that way, but there's something to it. Like, hey, why don't we get the guy in now instead of having a group of six down the line? I think it makes sense this year.
Yeah, I've been a voter for a long time, and I do think when you get to a year like this, if the alternative is let's elect somebody or let's elect nobody, my inclination is, yeah, I would really like to see somebody get elected. And, just looking at the way the Hall of Fame tracker has reflected how certain candidates are surging, but Scott Rolen really hasn't surged that much. It feels to me like that mentality didn't happen so much in his case. I think there are other forces at work. But why would that be that, you're looking at this from afar. Why would it be that the brethren, the writers, wouldn't have that urge to elect somebody when Scott Rolen was so close, 47 votes away.
Yes, and he kind of checks most boxes, not all boxes, right? You know, who does? Mike Schmidt does. Yeah. Great. Good,
Chipper,
right?
Chipper was pretty easy.
Chipper's pretty good. George Brett was kind of easy. Eddie Matthews, I think back in the day, was probably pretty easy for people. But I don't know. You saw my essay today. It's not just that he has a 70 war. It's not just that he's ninth in war at his position. I showed what the all ninth war team was, right?
That was
at every
great
position, ninth war. And I think it's Willie McCovey, Willie Stargell, Pee Wee Reese, Roberto Alomar, Tony Gwynn. It's pretty strong, right? You get the sense that's a Hall. It is. It's literally a Hall of Fame team, except for Maurer and for who are we talking about? Blanked out already. I'm going to have too many names in my head. And for Rolen, right? So it's literally, and Rolen is on the ballot, and Maurer hits next year. So it's this team where, like, should the top 10 at each position get into the Hall of Fame? Essentially, yes, is the answer. And he had all these years of 31 homers, 110 RBIs. He had these back of the baseball card numbers that the guys who were like from another era that never got hip to total baseball or read Bill James or anything. It's like, I don't know, 34 homers, 124 RBIs by a third baseman. Oh, you tell me. He has a bunch of those years.
And, you know, it's not like he did it for invisible teams. The Phillies were no good when he was there. I can vouch for that. But he played on Cardinals teams. One of them won the World Series. Another one won 105 games and lost the World Series to the Red Sox. Mm. But he played some amazing baseball for good teams. And I can tell you, as somebody who covered him in Philadelphia, I mean, he arrived in Philadelphia at 21 years old. And watching him, I thought, I've never seen anything like this. I saw Mike Schmidt play. I'd never seen the position played the way Scott Rolen played it. I wrote in my column that he was like a combo platter of Brooks Robinson meets Lawrence Taylor. Because he just had this ferocity about the way he played the position. If it was hit anywhere in the left side of the infield, he was sure he was going to catch it. He'd run over the grounds crew. The shortstop didn't matter. Mm-hmm. And then he had this remarkable arm where sitting down, one knee, fading away, he could throw you out. And it was dazzling to watch. I mean, I know it wasn't this age, but games were on TV then.
We
have highlights so we can show people.
It was cable TV.
I thought this to myself. Tell me what you think. I think if he had played in the age of StatCast, where we could really measure precisely the amount of ground he covered and the balls he turned into outs that other third basemen didn't, I think it would have helped Scott Rolen.
Yeah, I think so too. He had new defensive metrics. He had defensive now, because now we can absolutely look at Nolan Arenado, Manny Machado, whoever it is at third base, and say, wow, look at this guy. It's not just that, well, he's really good or he's excellent. It's like, he's plus 21. Like, that's when you put a number to something, it changes your thought on it. And absolutely, if he had some of these outrageous defensive metrics, like the way we think of Arenado now, you're like, well, no, he's not just plus, he's elite. It's beyond that. And Arenado was viewed that way. I mean, Rolen was viewed that way.
Yeah, I think he's really a cross between Nolan Arenado and Adrian Beltre. I mean, Arenado in the sense that, like, watching them both play third base is a very similar experience. And Beltre, because he was steady, the way Scott Rolen was steady offensively. And, you know, I've used this stat a bunch of times, but Scott Rolen had 8 seasons with a gold glove and an OPS 20% above league average or more. The only third baseman in history who had more than that was Mike Schmidt. I mean, he's got more than Arenado has of seasons like that. I just think he was a better offensive player than people remember and an incredible base runner and a leader and a winner, very strong-minded guy. So I think he's easy for you and me, but I don't think he gets elected this week.
All right. That'd be a shame.
It would be a shame. Yeah. But now let me that leads into the furor. Listed on Twitter was my ballot, just the names. There was a link to my column. Nobody wanted to get that far. They just wanted to look at those names.
Right. And that would take work to actually read your column.
Yeah, we can't ask that.
Yeah, no.
All right, so on the list, Scott Rolen. Not on the list, Andrew Jones. The Andrew Jones fan club cannot comprehend this.
Yeah.
Here's what I find interesting about it. I'll be happy to defend this in a minute, but just because the case for two players starts with the glove doesn't mean they have the same case.
Yeah, right. Of course.
Therefore, I need to vote for both of them.
I'm puzzled at all because you tell me now. If I had my mythical ballot, if I had a vote, I have Andrew Jones on it. That you don't, and you tell me you don't. It's not like, I don't get it. How could you be thinking what you think? I know exactly what you're thinking. I don't know precisely what you're thinking. I know vaguely what you're thinking. He's on the border. It's like Maury Wills, Minnie Mignoso, Ken Boyer. You could make a case, but if you're thinking not quite, makes sense. He had a 10-year career of a great glove. A lot of guys who have a great 6-8 years, I'm a peak guy, but they have the great bat. He didn't have a great bat. He had a good enough bat, and he had a great glove. But it's a different sort of career. And he did fall off a cliff, and he wasn't even a good defensive player at that point. And perhaps, the metrics do overrate him a bit. I think, again, I watched him play through those years. I thought he was very good. I did not get the same feeling. I'm not saying this is a completely accurate thing. Did not get the same feeling I did when I was watching Paul Blair, for example, who was a monster in center field. Or think of the Kansas City Royals during their championship run, where it was Lorenzo Cain and Alex Gordon, and the ball never quite hit grass. Like, there was a 2-year run where, and you're watching playoffs, and you're like, the ball doesn't seem to fall into the outfield at all with these guys. I didn't get that sense, but I know Jones, it's not a phantom metric either. He did cover a ton of ground. So I'm voting yes because he hits enough things that I like with the outrageous defensive metrics, with a center fielder. I think we jobbed center fielders in our Hall of Fame voting.
No doubt.
Edmonds, Bernie, Lofton, what happened?
We've elected two and four.
Yeah, ridiculous. I think Beltran was the guy who was going to be, getting that combo platter vote of, oh, okay, you don't have to hit quite like Mickey Mantle because he's the greatest ever, but we can accept a little lesser offense. But I understand why you don't. I don't think you're crazy, but it brings to mind the pattern that we've had recently. And actually, I have an essay on this for MLB Now on Tuesday that, think about it, McGriff and Jeff Kent started about the same level as Rolen, as Messina, Edgar Martinez, Tim Raines, the sabermetric darlings. And these are our guys. We're the sabermetric guys. we love sabermetric darlings. I create sabermetric darlings. And these guys are not. And they never got the same traction. Jeff Kent, Fred McGriff just kind of languished. And isn't it kind of obvious that now that McGriff is a Hall of Famer, it's kind of obvious Jeff Kent is a Hall of Famer. It's kind of obvious. So, yeah, these guys are on the border. And yet it gets into this vote shaming where Larry Walker made these huge leaps. And God bless him. But a lot of it was the old writers. Newspapers are dying. You're getting labeled as a dinosaur. And it's evolve or die. And everyone suddenly watched Moneyball and thought, I don't want to die. I'd like to evolve. I'll evolve. I'll do whatever you people want. Fine with me. And it's eventually like, oh, I give. Again, what's fashionable and what's unfashionable? That's a John Thorne thing that I picked up. Because what is in fashion?
That's a
it's
great
not
point.
That you have to. Right. It's fashionable now to not want to punish guys who have used PEDs. It used to be fashionable to punish them. Now it is not fashionable. So now if you went out and said, hey, you know what? Everyone was good with steroids. I'm good with the guys who did steroids. You'd get applause. It just is. It's more fashionable. So Andrew Jones right now with a Sabre set and Braves fans, it's fashionable. And you're picking something that's unfashionable. Defensible, right. Unfashionable.
Yeah, it's very easy to go along with the, just ride the tide. And follow the crowd as the vote totals start to climb. And hey, the Andrew Jones, if he ever makes it, the climb would be historic. He was getting 32-33 yeah. votes his first 2 years.
And I'm all for changing it. If you think, hey, so what the guy vote total was, Burt Blyleven, wherever. Guys who were like, hey, wait a second, you gotta
I've
take
evolved
a closer
on
look.
Guys like that.
Yeah.
And I did try to make the point when I wrote my column that I don't pretend I know it all. I don't pretend I've seen it all. I enjoy the dialogue with smart people, and I have had a lot of that dialogue with Andrew Jones. And so let me just explain a little bit my thinking, if any Braves fans are listening this far in. Offensively, I don't see a guy who is as good as 430 whatever homers makes him look. He would have the lowest batting average of any outfielder in the Hall of Fame and the second lowest at any position. Okay, that's a guy who needs help offensively. Had a 111 OPS plus for his career, would be third lowest of any outfielder. So he would need remarkable defense, right? Just based on that.
Right.
You mentioned the cliff. Age 30, after age 30, this guy didn't, he played five more years and didn't have five wins above replacement combined. He would have the fewest wins above replacement from age 30 on of any Hall of Fame outfielder. So again, you don't need just great defense. You need historically great defense.
Right.
And there are metrics that make it feel like that's what Andrew Jones was. The greatest ever, better than Mays. I'm that guy who for a while now has said, I'm not sure that's what he was. And, you know, so I've been reading the work and been in touch with this guy named Chris Dial, he's the other real contrarian on Andrew Jones' defense, who has argued, if you really look at this, look, for 3-4 years, he was the best we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, he began to gain weight. He began to lose sprint speed. A lot of the metrics are dependent on the fact that in that outfield with guys like Ryan Klesko playing in the corners, you know, he was allowed to catch every soft fly ball to left center, every pop-up that the shortstop or the second baseman catch on most teams. And it padded his numbers to the point where the Chris Dial's theory is he clearly deserved only 3 or 4 of those gold gloves. And even if you say, well, there are variables that, you know, we're taking into account who else was in the league, nowhere close to 10. And I know other people who think this. I've been talking to them ever since I wrote my Stark Truth book. And so I've tried hard to vote for Andrew Jones. I'm just not quite there. Because if there's even a question about whether his period of defensive dominance was as long as we want to make it seem to be, I don't think he has anything else, or not enough, beside the glove to motivate me to vote for him. But if I, by saying that, can you tell I thought about it a little bit?
Yeah, that's what I mean. You're in the weeds. Like you're not glossing over. You're getting deep into it. And there is something to, again, back in the old days, anecdotal notes were like ruled the day. Well, now you're starting with the data and then you're going to anecdotes and you're going into, because you can always find, oh, I talked to one guy that said this guy was terrific. Oh, I talked to one guy that said this guy was terrible. You can always find those guys, right? And but you're asking real questions, trying to get answers. And yeah, you've gotten into it. I'm looking it up as you go just to refresh in my head. Again, his peak years, 1998 to 2007, those are high run scoring years. So he slugs over 500. So if you look at it at face value, hey, wait a second. He was a good fielder. We know he's pretty good.
I'm not disputing that.
Nobody's saying he's not good. So we know he's good at least. But he slugged 500 so for 10 years. So to my mind, it's like that's kind of saying he's in the Hall of Fame. His OPS plus, though, in that stretch is 115. It's like guys who drove in 140 runs in the Depression. It's like a lot of guys were doing that. It was being done because they were scoring exactly so many runs. Now, find a guy who was hitting 340, nobody was, in 1968, 1969, 1970. Like, that's monstrous. That's like hitting 390 in any other era. So you have to take into context the run scoring. And I'm with you on the defense. I was watching, look, I was at ESPN in those days doing Baseball Tonight. I was watching a lot of baseball. I didn't go crazy for him the way you go crazy for, Brooks Robinson, Ozzie Smith. Like, there are guys that you want. Keith Hernandez. Like, I'll go to the wall on Keith Hernandez in defense. Will. I'll go, and anybody wants to tell me, it's like when you just weren't watching. You weren't watching closely. I'll go to the wall on Don Mattingly's defense. I have Hernandez a little better than Mattingly, but I also watched Mattingly a ton. He was a fantastic glove at first base, and I think the metrics job him. So I can do that for a lot of different players, and you've gone into the weeds on this, and I think you're onto something. I can still say I'm comfortable voting with him, but he's on the border.
He's on the border. Yeah. Exactly right. All right. We don't want to spend the whole thing on Andrew Jones. Carlos Beltran, best of the first year candidates on this ballot, has a little asterisk, though, from the 2017 Astros. Do you think the 2017 Astros and his role in that sign stealing, specifically called out by Rob Manfred in his report, should be enough to keep Carlos Beltran out of the Hall of Fame?
I don't know. I know. I do think this, because having gone through the whole steroid era, where, again, for a long time now, we've wondered, like, where's the outrage for this? And we've seen an erosion of that outrage, right? I didn't anticipate that. The younger voters will kind of tell you, the millennials, guys who are just getting the vote now, will say, these guys were all cheating and they allowed it and Bud Selig liked it. And it's like, wait, hold on a second. It was flat out considered cheating back then. Flat out was. Ben Johnson shamed 1988. So you're telling me in the mid-90s it was the loosey-goosey era? No, it wasn't. It was loosey-goosey in a sense.
There were a lot of people doing it.
Wild West. But they were doing it, and there were a lot of guys not doing it. And yet it was considered cheating. It was considered wrong. If it was considered right, they would have talked about it. I use testosterone, and it's fantastic. Like, they would have said that. They don't say it now. You can't say it now. So it was cheating. Now, I've never, in baseball, seen the outrage that there was for anything, that there was for sign stealing. My prediction, it was fashionable to hate the Astros. It was fashionable to hate Jeff Luhnow. And when you had the weight of baseball, the commissioner, everybody, and then the players, the players never pipe in and hate on their fellow players. They hated the Astros. They were all, Yankees hated them, Dodgers hated them, everybody hated them. It was fashionable, and there was a dog pile. And guys got fired, guys got ostracized, guys got banished. Beltran got banished. He had the job with the Mets and he got booted out. So I had the sense the whole time that when it comes to Beltran on the ballot, that outrage is actually not there. It was fashionable. People like to hate on them. And I think it barely dings him in this vote.
We're seeing from his vote total that the outrage is not there. He's going to be somewhere around 50%, maybe above 50%. And that surprises me. I mean, none of the equivalent PED guys in their first year got 40%. He's going to get 50. So that is telling us something. But I can tell you, he held up my ballot for over a week, trying to sort out what I wanted to do about this. I mean, I did all the work that showed.
So you said, is he on your ballot or not?
I voted for him.
You are voting.
You did vote for him.
But so where's your outrage?
Okay, well, I mean, it wasn't that hard to establish this guy had a Hall of Fame career. And he'd already had it.
Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, by the way, I agree with you. There are a lot of people that, like, you have a very enlightened view. Again, because you have to take into consideration he's playing center field. And you have to take into consideration he could field, he was a good base runner, he was an excellent postseason player. He's an excellent postseason. Well, yeah, but so was Bernie Williams, so was Jimmy Edmonds, so Kenny Lofton was a great fielder and base runner. They got lost in the sauce.
That was terrible.
Like, does he have 500 home runs? Where is he with his RBIs? How many MVPs did he win? He doesn't have that old stuff. I was heartened when it became like a thing that Carlos Beltran was a Hall of Famer. I'm like, this is good, because people are seeing the proper context of his total game, that he was that good. Of course, he's over the line. For us, I'm saying there'd be a lot of people that weren't there. But all I'm saying is, like, you don't ding him at all. So the sign stealing thing didn't bother you, which is fine. But I wonder, it seemed to bother so many people.
If it didn't bother me, why did it take me over a week to decide I was going to vote?
You got over it.
I couldn't.
You got over it pretty quickly.
I had to sort through it. And I'll tell you, one of the quote that stuck with me was a quote from the piece in The Athletic that Ken Rosenthal and Evan Drellick wrote about Carlos Beltran and his role in that scandal, in which he got to the Astros and he said, you guys are behind the times on sign stealing, right? And so what is that telling us? He had been other places or knew of other places where they were already doing the stuff that the Astros then learned to do, except they threw trash cans in there.
Well, that's it. I think, I don't know, right? But watching the whole thing, we knew. I was, you know, I've been at World Series. Remember the Dodgers-Astros World Series? There was whistling back and forth. If you were down low, and I happened to be down low, and I remember talking to, you know, I forgot who I was talking to, probably Dave Roberts. And he was like, they were outraged. Bob Guerin was the bench coach. And like, they would see the signs go in, the pitcher come to the set and like that. And they'd be like, oh, time out. Hold on. Because they knew, wait, you're up to something. Now, there is a line. We know there is a legal part of that. And Carlos Beltran was considered the best at it. Part of his reputation that really was burnished in the latter part of his career was that he was so smart. He mentored the younger players. He taught them the nuances of the game. And I think, I like to think that the Yankees, Red Sox, Cubs, the upper echelon smart teams with baseball ops, they were all doing things, but there was a line. And I think the Astros were the most developed, the most aggressive, and the smartest. And they had enough people in there that I think they went that next step.
They did.
And they went there. And Beltran was a pivotal figure in that. So do I want to punish the guy forever? Jason, I don't want to punish anybody forever. Would I ding him for 1 year? I think John Heyman has, a very good vote. He said, I think there's something to still in this day and age to being a first ballot Hall of Famer. Eventually, Carlos Beltran should be honored. I don't want to ding him forever. I don't want to ding Pete Rose forever, actually. I don't want to punish anybody for their whole lives. But I think 1 year sends a proper message.
See, I think that's what's happening. It's going to work out fine for him, but I have a philosophy that I've learned the hard way that if you say to yourself, well, I think this guy's a Hall of Famer, but he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer, so I won't vote for him this year, and then all 400 other voters say that, there's no second year. So I'm just, yeah. I'm not going to be that guy. All right, we could talk Hall of Fame like for hours. Before we go, I want to ask you about the top 10 right now shows, which you are doing. I guess they go on for, they started what, 3 weeks ago? They run for another couple of weeks.
Like another week something or something like that. Yeah.
And I participated in this for the first time in the Right Fielder show. And I knew it was hard to come up with these lists. I never realized how hard it was until I had to do it. And I put in hours for what I think was a 4-minute segment. And yeah. I thought it would be the names at the top that really burned my brain cells. It really is figuring out.
It's not. It's 9, 10, and who's not making it.
Who you're leaving
it. Yeah, right,
off.
Right.
So this is what you find from doing them all these years?
Yeah. I don't know if you noticed, I've become much less strident about it. But I think there's a fascinating dynamic happening where, and I alluded to it today, when John Morosi had like Mark Burley and Torrey Hunter. And when he said, I have Hunter on my ballot, and I go, Torrey Hunter? Like, I just didn't know. I'm not used to hearing that. Good. Somebody should take a flyer on this guy. Somebody should make a case for. And I found on all of our lists, there's a homogenization of thought. There is a groupthink at work. We're all the shredder now. It used to be controversial, top 10 right now. Maybe it's marginally controversial here or there, but the shredder used to be wildly controversial. And now, no matter who it is, if it's Carlos Pena, Sean Casey, Ron Darling, whoever comes in, like essentially their list is the same. And actually, like now even Bob Costas and Mad Dog have a similar list. And I want someone make a case for someone.
I did that.
Who did you make a case
for? Lars Nootbaar.
Lars Nootbaar, good. Good. Excellent. Good. Come on. But my even thing was like, I thought I was taking a stand by not having Gerrit Cole in my top 10. But
that
then
is a stand.
But nobody had Gerrit Cole in their top 10.
Wow.
And I thought, hey, somebody should. Like, yeah, the metrics aren't there. Don't like the cut of his jib. There's all sorts of things. But hold on. At the end of next year, what's the probability or possibility that we'll be saying, what a great year by Gerrit Cole, top three in Cy Young, and he's easily one of the top 10 of the game. Like, it's a very good possibility or probability that that'll be the case. Yeah. Someone should take a flyer on him. Someone should make a case for Christian Yelich. Nobody would. It's like, somebody should. Like, Cody Bellinger. Somebody should make a case for Cody Bellinger in the top 10. And a few did. Like, I slipped him in at 10. A few people did. You know, that's where your wild card pick goes. But there is, it's not, I don't know if it's disturbing, but again, what Sabermetrics was supposed to be about? Critical thinking and not just a group think. And I think we've all come up with the same way of thinking. We're coming up with essentially the same lists. And have we all just gotten smart, or are we all just thinking the same way?
Well, there's a lot more information now to help you build those lists, but there is too much groupthink. And this, you know, I wanted to ask you about the shredder. There really is such a thing as the shredder.
We have a proprietary formula. And the best thing about the shredder is also the worst thing about the shredder, is that the shredder, we do not change. That's one thing I work with the researchers. We don't make exceptions. We don't say, what?
You can't manipulate the shredder.
No.
Get somebody
no.
on there that well, you really
or
want.
Get, or get someone off. If you get a bad result, no. There's no bad result. There's the result. And we've done that. Now, I think we've changed like the sample size for relief pitching because it's so volatile. We made a change on that. I think we've also in the past few years gone to Fangraphs War for catching because it uses a framing component. We just thought that was better. We do things that we think are better. I think the shredder uses like a 3-year sample, but it weights the more recent more. I got rid of 2020 because it was a weird year. Obviously, it's a 2-month season. It's a strange pandemic year. So I got rid of that, but the shredder doesn't. But again, the shredder will sometimes, again, the shredder's strength is it doesn't care about all your little machinations. The numbers are the numbers, and this is it. Now, from there, we should be better than the shredder. We should be able to look at the shredder's numbers and say, yes, but, yes, and. Or there's a couple of players on there where a 3-year sample is just the worst thing you can do to a guy. Because actually, a 1-year sample is great. A 4-year sample where you get his great 2019 is in. And you can do that.
And it's the top 10
the shredder
right now.
Can. Yeah.
So you have to be thinking ahead. How does the shredder
You're projecting after? For next year. Right. Right.
I'm just happy to hear that the shredder is as all-powerful as I've always dreamed it to be.
No emotion, no bias, no tinkering. We do not tinker with the shredder. When it spits out.
Does it do any actual shredding? I could bring some up.
We
got a big box of shredding.
Do you have any classified documents near your Corvette? Is that what you're saying? Yeah, no.
It
does not shred. Yeah. Good answer.
Brian, I love hanging around Cooperstown with you. We'll be doing it all week. The Hall of Fame selection show, announcement show? Is that what we're
calling it? It's called announcement show, yes. The official announcement.
6 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday, MLB Now. 2 to 4 Tuesday, 2 to 3 Wednesday. You, me, John Paul Morosi. It's so much fun to be here doing this show. So please join us for that. Thanks for listening to me and Brian do our thing on the Hall of Fame. We've been doing it for 20-something years. It never gets tired.
Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. One more great product from LinkedIn. You're there to network, you're there to look for jobs, you're there to post jobs. And how about LinkedIn Sales Navigator? It's a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date, first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/baseballshow. That is linkedin.com/baseballshow for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/baseballshow and get started.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Okay, Doug is back. And Doug, you know what we're not doing this week? Trivia. It's such a busy week. We're trying to streamline a little bit. But there's one segment we couldn't possibly skip, and that is The Dugout. That is the place where we gather around every show around our friend Doug Glanville. And we allow him to tell one of his many entertaining stories about his life in baseball. So this week, Doug, look, you played with Scott Rolen. You played with a guy who might be getting elected to the Hall of Fame. Scott is a smart, funny human being. So I would like to lean back now and let you tell your favorite Scott Rolen stories. I might chip in one at the end, but go for it, man.
Man, it's so hard to pick. I mean, I'm trying to think. Well, all right, yes, Scott was funny. I mean, he's dry humor, and you know, I mean, I always enjoyed center field was what I called the office. So I'd be out in center during batting practice, and all these players would come out there, and we'd just talk about whatever. And I always appreciated that as young players. Veterans, you know, you see third baseman like rolling out in center field. And he used to have these, you know, all his theories with air out there. So I think of a couple of things, but one story about him coming out was there was a second half of the season, and it was one of the other many futile years that we were chasing the Atlanta Braves. That was impossible, and we always were staring at their back. So, you know, I hadn't even thought about it. It was like the All-Star break. We start the second half. I'm like, all right, yeah, let's go. All right, let's go. We're going to figure it out. We have this good team. And Scott is like, look, let me explain something to you right now. Okay. So the Braves are playing like 750 baseball or whatever they are. If we play 800 baseball the rest of the season and the Braves play 500, we still won't catch them. So the season's over. Okay. The season is over.
Pretty uplifting.
I was like, oh, that's just great. Like, I mean, it's like, I hadn't thought of that. So Scott was a piece of work. And the thing about him that, you know, outside of the calculations and the sometimes the circular conversations you might have with Scott, it's like there was one time where we went on a road trip to the West Coast and we got beat. Like we won one game in every series, but we, you know, end up like 4-8 or whatever it was, right? So it's like Padres, Rockies, whoever, Giants, Dodgers, or something. So we come back. I think there's like a day off, and then we have early batting practice the next day. So, you know, and there's a game. So, all right. So, you know, I played mostly every day. And so Bobby Abreu, myself, and Roland, maybe one other guy, but Travis Lee, I think, we didn't come to early batting practice, right? And we're all hitting probably 220 at the time. So Larry Bo is the manager, and he's outraged. Like, how do you guys not take early batting practice? You stink, and we just lost 4 out of 12, whatever, 8 out of 12. Where are you guys, right? So he calls Bobby. I think it's Bobby, Scott, and I in the office. And you know, Bo is like kind of, you know, bobbing his head at it, you know, and, you know, calling us out. And Scott, you know, this is Rolen, right? You can't mess with Scott Rolen. He's like, are you questioning my professionalism? Are you questioning my professionalism? That's all. And like the room, I think not only did it get silent, it got cold in there. Like I think the temperature dropped 30 degrees. Like Scott Rolen, that ice, you're not quite, like I hit off the tee every day. That is my routine. You need to trust me as a professional that I know what needs to be done to be prepared for this game. So I don't appreciate you. So, I mean, and you could see Boa like, just like his eyes, like saucers, and he just sort of has to melt off of his point. It's like, no, I'm not saying that. And, you know, he just had to kind of change the conversation. And, And I understood what Bo was doing. I know he was trying to shake us up because he's like, don't be complacent here. And it's true. We were veterans and we had routines. Bobby liked soft toss, Roland liked the tee. You know, I was kind of a soft toss guy. And we, you know, that's what we trusted more than like hitting on the field that particular day. And it was a West Coast long trip. So we made that choice. But it wasn't good optics and there was young guys hitting. I get it. But Scott was very focused on his routine. And, you know, he had his plan. And so, you know, the question came up.
We could do an hour of Scott and Boa stories.
Oh, my goodness.
We'll spare people those. Well, but yeah, that was no love fest.
No.
He did not enjoy being told by Larry what he should and should be doing, right. Shouldn't be doing about anything. So
yeah,
back to you,
no. No, it was a tough go, but you know, Scott very much, you know, focused. He had his lunch pail, he's going in, he works hard and he just wants to get in and do his thing. And that was the focus. So professional of the core, you know, being from Jasper, Indiana, he had a lot of pride and just like how things are done in the heartland. You know, he kind of had his approach. And you know, he was funny. He had a lot of, you know, quiet jokes and he kept everybody laughing in a lot of ways, but he was also very serious about, you know, his craft. It was definitely, you know, a workman's approach. So, you know, so I appreciated it. And to this day, you know, I text him once in a while, he'll call me and we just laugh sometimes, pick up the phone. I remember when he, one off season when he had his daughter and, you know, he leaves me this message and I listen to it. He's like, can't sleep. Insomnia, tired, don't know what I'm doing. And it's like, this is what happens when you have a child for the first time. He was so delirious. So, I mean, Scott was just a, you know, piece of work. So, but yes, loved watching him play, played with total reckless abandon. And, you know, he kept it light and you learned when he was, you know, being serious and when he wasn't. But every day was a joy, and I think that's what he brought. So when you think of Hall of Fame, I could see Scott in there. It'd definitely be a lot more fun if he is.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing about him was he could not self-promote. He would not self-promote.
No, he would not.
He would never, ever do that. And, you know, like I have I don't know why this story is stuck in my head, Doug, about him, but it was in spring training one year, and if I'm remembering this right, he makes a long trip to go face Pedro Martinez, okay? And Pedro strikes him out three times. He goes over three against three punch-outs, with three punch-outs against Pedro, and then comes out of the game. And so I said to him, what are you doing? Like, why did you make this trip? You got stature here. You didn't have to do this. Why did you want to come face Pedro? And he said, just wanted to find out how bad I really am. that was it. Just Mr. Dry Humor has spoken. Any more questions? I just wanted to find out how bad I really was. And that's just a story, a line, a look on his face that sticks in my head when I think of covering that guy. He had thoughts. It was always fun to talk to him because you never know where it was going. But I love that about players. I particularly loved it about Scott. He was a beauty. He didn't always let the world see that hilarious side of him, but that's really like the best part of having a segment on this podcast where we can tell these stories. And so if he gets elected next year instead of this week, we can tell more of them next year, right? That works for me.
Oh, many, many times. I mean, I just think of, this captures him pretty well. When we were, the cutter became the thing, right? This is during our career, you know, didn't see a lot. And started to become a pitcher, you know. So he got a 2-0 count. He pops up on a cutter to the shortstop. And he walks in the dugout and just says, does everyone have a cutter? And that's it. They put his bat down. He just had five a master words, right? of like 0-2 takes. I mean, he just did some things. But yeah, Scott is legendary. So hopefully I'm talking about him in the near future about his election. But if not, maybe next year.
Yeah, he's going to get in. If he doesn't get in, I think he should look at it as he's just getting more time to work in the speech. And what a speech it'll be.
Oh, priceless.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's show. We'll be bringing you podcast magic just like this all off season long on the Athletic Baseball Show, which is available in its entirety, absolutely free, everywhere you get your podcasts. If you'd like to read any of the great Hall of Fame coverage in The Athletic, we can tell you how. You should try going to theathletic.com/baseballshow. And if you're a new subscriber, you can subscribe for just $1.99 a month for the next 12 months. What a deal. But also remember, you too can be part of this podcast. Most of these shows, although not this show, we pick the most fun listener trivia question of the week. Then that listener gets to join us right here and prove, once again, there is almost no baseball trivia question we can't get wrong. One good thing about not having trivia, didn't get one wrong this week. But it will be back. So if you'd like to join us and stump us with trivia, you can email us at Starkville, with an E on the end, at theathletic.com. Or there's always Twitter. Doug Glanville, I believe you remain on Twitter. Is that correct?
I'm still here. I'm trying to, go for the long haul. And you can find me very easily and very boringly at Doug Glanville. DougGlanville.
That's pretty standard stuff. You can find me at JaySonst. That's Jason with a Y, S-T. Remember to hashtag those questions. Hashtag Starkville QS. So, Doug, thanks for playing. Thanks to Brian Kennedy for visiting us. Thanks to the mayor of Starkville, Tim McMaster, for producing us and putting up with us. And thanks to you all for listening. Doug and I will see you soon on Starkville. Nope.
That's pretty good.
Not good. Awesome. No, not good.